This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Coming up on today's program, the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan is hoping for a speedy decision from government on changes to the Agri-Stability Support Program. We'll hear from President Todd Lewis. There could be the possibility of higher winter kill levels in fall-seeded crops this spring. Paul Thurlgood is based in the Moose Jaw area and is the agriculture lead for Ducks Unlimited. We'll hear from him on that as well. Dairy Farmers of Canada is asking its members to consider an alternative to palm supplement, pending the outcome of a study by stakeholders and experts. But we'll speak to Andrew Campbell, who is known online as the Fresh Air Farmer, and he has a dairy farm in Ontario. He will give us his take on the whole issue. The president of the Saskatchewan Stockgrowers Association is calling last week's fundraising auction a huge success. We'll hear from Kelsey Elford of Caronport. And if we have time, we should also hear from Dr. Denise Beaulieu, an assistant professor of monogastric nutrition in the University of Saskatchewan's College of Agriculture and Bioresources, as she tells us about early results from work being conducted there that show extreme processing using heat and steam has the capacity to reduce the toxicity of ergot-contaminated grains. All that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your RE/MAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, a bit cloudy, a bit breezy, and a bit cold today, but aside from that, it looks like March is going to come in like a lamb.
Yeah, and it's going to be pretty decent. You know, we had a shortened winter, and it was not just us. A good portion of the continent had this sort of rough, short stretch of winter, and now we're heading back. We're above normal. We're above freezing most of this week, so not a bad one at all. Today, there will be some flurries around, nothing of much consequence, but the cloudiness is thickening up a bit. There's plenty of it around already. Thicker overcast, some flurries around through the afternoon. Temperature still cool coming out of the morning. We're pretty close to average on that regard, but as the day goes on, we'll slowly warm. And it's going to be a steady warming through the afternoon, through this evening, through tonight, and to about tomorrow morning. Right about sunrise is when the warming will stop. We'll be minus 8 in the afternoon today. Wind chill, though, still down. The wind in the 15 to 30 range, gusting up to 40, 45 at times. And that overall wind chill stays in the minus 20s for a few more hours. The momentary wind chill, when we get those gusts, will stay in the minus 20s a little longer. But as we rise to minus 8, it takes a lot of wind to get the wind chill down to minus 20, so the wind chill back into the minus teens by later afternoon, and the temperature rises. It's above freezing overnight. We're up to 2 by morning. The wind turns around into the west and northwest, and then the temperature falls through the day tomorrow, down to minus 3, so hardly a bottom dropping out, but cooler through the day. The front goes by, and all the precipitation, the limited precipitation there is on the warm front side of it. So as the warm air comes in, we get the flurries today. The cold front comes through with little fanfare. Temperature falls to minus 3 tomorrow afternoon, down to minus 11 tomorrow night. And, you know, I call it a cold front because it is, but it's not bringing in a deep cold. What it's doing is knocking down the temperature for a few hours, and then warm air builds right back in. So minus 11 tomorrow night is well above normal. Daytime high Tuesday, right back above freezing. We'll be around 2. The question becomes just how warm it actually gets, because we're now not quite to spring, so we don't have that full sun, but we have a lot of warm air. So at least a few degrees above freezing for Thursday and Friday. The potential there for temperatures to jump even more looks like right through the weekend we're going to be well above freezing. So Thursday and Friday we'll say around 2 or 3 degrees.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 18 degrees, Swan River minus 19, Dauphin minus 17, Brandon and Roblin minus 15, Show Lake Russell minus 16. Regina is at minus 10, Saskatoon minus 5, Hudson Bay minus 14, Broadview, Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington minus 7, Indian Head minus 9. The Yorkton-Melville region has a partly cloudy sky, a south-southeast wind at 24, gusting to 33 kilometers an hour. Minus 14 degrees is our temperature. With the wind chill, it feels more like 23 degrees. And, of course, the relative humidity is 79%. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 13 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 24 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 5. The normal low is minus 16. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:34 this morning, and it will set at 6:30 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Morden at minus 10 degrees. The cold spot Churchill at minus 36 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Valmarie, which got up to plus 2 degrees. The cold spot was Key Lake at minus 47 degrees. And that's your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 90 seconds time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. The Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan is hoping for a speedy decision from government on changes to the Agri-Stability Support Program. President Todd Lewis says it's good to know discussions are still underway, but farmers need to know if the federal enhancements will be accepted by the provinces.
Well, I think it's good that both sides are still in negotiations, but at the same time, the clock's ticking. You know, Minister Haupauer made her remarks, I believe it was on Wednesday, at the crop insurance announcement, and crop insurance announcement was made so producers can start to plan how their risk management programs are going to look this year. And we need some certainty around agri-stability. Is it going to be the same program? Is there going to be some improvements? Is it going to be retroactive to 2020? All these questions are important because, you know, it'll affect how much crop insurance producers take out in some cases, how much private insurance they may buy. So it's a complicated system, and it's important that we have some clarity around agri-stability much sooner than later.
The federal government has made some offers to improve agri-stability, but the Prairie provinces are concerned about the cost. How important is it to improve the program?
Well, as I said, it's a big part of business risk management for both livestock and grain producers in this province. And so I think if we have the improvements, we really haven't seen any new money come into the program since even before 2008 when they made the changes. So it's been a long time since we've seen new money in the program, and this offer puts new money into it, increases some of the reference margin limits and as well as the percentage of payout. So it puts more money in producers' pockets that they do have to make a claim. And it's important to remember it is an insurance program. It isn't a blank check for producers. You have to qualify, and you only qualify if you have financial impacts on your operation. And especially due to COVID, our livestock industry has seen very volatile prices. And so it's important that we have increased coverage for our producers.
The federal proposal would remove the reference margin limit and increase the compensation rate from 70 to 80%. Would that be effective?
I think it will certainly go a long way in some producers to see improvements like that. We know that there's going to be new programming come out in 2023, and that's when the next agreement starts between the provinces and federal government. So this is will just be a stopgap measure until we get the new agreement in place, and hopefully we see further improvements.
On another topic, what are your thoughts on the changes to Saskatchewan crop insurance announced last week? Coverage rises 22% to a record $273 per acre. but premiums jumped 16% to $8.59 per acre.
Well, I think, you know, that's how crop insurance works. We see rising commodity prices, so that's good news. Nobody likes to see increased premiums, but you get, like all insurance, we're getting more value for the insurance if we do make a claim. So rising prices make rising costs as well, it seems like. And I think crop insurance is an important backstop for a lot of the province's grain producers. And I mean, I think we're going to continue to see good uptake by producers in the crop insurance program. Especially the, you know, the improvements they made in the tame hay option. Those are, crop insurance has done a good job of recognizing needs within the ag community. And I think this is another example where they've seen some problems in, with the tame hay production. They're offering insurance.
And they're looking at a pilot insurance program for commercial vegetable producers.
Well, you know, Saskatchewan, we do have a very quiet vegetable industry, but at the same time, it's local food is more and more important. And, you know, that's really something that the more vegetables we grow in the province, the less that have to be imported throughout the year. And certainly we have good producers in the vegetable sector that hopefully it's an expanding part of our industry. And it's good to see the government be able to put a program in place.
That's Todd Lewis. He's president of the Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan. It's coming up on 12:30 on GX on Agriculture, and it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX94, AgriView.
Two more deaths have been linked to a COVID-19 outbreak affecting people who work at the Olly Mill pork plant in Red Deer, Alberta. The United Food and Commercial Workers, Henry DeLeon, died on Wednesday, and Alberta Health says a woman in her 60s died from COVID-19 last Sunday, but her name was not released. To date, a total of three workers who work at the plant have died in an outbreak that has affected about 500 people in recent weeks. The plant was temporarily shut down 2 weeks ago as a result of the outbreak. CN and CP Rail supplied a combined 72% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 29, an increase from last week's 44%, reflecting an increase in performance on both CN and CP. CN performance improved materially from Week 28, supplying 76% of cars ordered. CP's performance also improved week over week, supplying 69% of cars ordered as compared to 60% in the prior week. CN and CP combined will enter week 30 with 2,155 outstanding cars, a net 16% decline of 409 from the 2,564 cars outstanding at the end of last week. The change in the outstanding car count represents an increase in the number of outstanding hopper cars on CN by 200 and a decline in the number of outstanding hopper cars on CP by 609. Experts say that a new directive issued in response to the controversy known as Buttergate could make it hard for dairy farmers to keep up with consumer demand for the staple ingredient. Dairy Farmers of Canada is encouraging its members to find alternatives to palm supplements in cattle feed as a working group looks into consumer concerns that butter has become harder. The recommendation comes after media reports linked the purported change in consistency to the common practice of bolstering cows' diets with palm byproducts, which federal authorities have approved as a safe ingredient in livestock feeds. Animal science experts say there's no feed supplement that's as efficient or economical as palmitic acid, and warn that ruling it out could come at a cost to dairy producers and lead to an increase in butter imports. While some dairy farmers are looking into alternative feed supplements, others say they're sticking with palmitic acid because it's best for their cattle and their bottom lines. Daniel Lefebvre of Lactinet, which advises Dairy Farmers of Canada, says while Buttergate is based on unfounded claims, a turn in public perception poses a greater threat to the dairy industry than asking farmers to eliminate a safe and effective method to maximize production. Nova Scotia farmers will help students understand the importance of growing food locally during Canadian Agriculture Literacy Month, which begins today. This year, students in grade 3 will take part in an interactive project where they learn about growing produce from seeds. It will include virtual visits from farmers and a new video series featuring Frank Olton, a grade 8 student whose parents own Taproot Farms in Stars Point, Kings County, Nova Scotia. Students in grade 4 will learn about the aquaculture industry through a partnership with the Center for Oceans Ventures and Entrepreneurship. Newly published research out of the University of Calgary has looked at 3 years of events from the city's stampede in an attempt to peer inside the mind of a horse about to let her buck. Veterinary professor Ed Pajor says the behavior of 116 bucking horses he and his colleagues looked at suggests the more experience the animals have, the more they take the whole thing in stride. Horses that had appeared at more than one stampede showed many fewer signs of stress, both when being loaded into a trailer to be taken to the ring and while waiting in the bucking chute. Padger says the evidence neither suggests the calm behavior is the result of a defeated apathetic horse, nor can he conclude the animals enjoy their 8-second burden. What it does suggest, he says, is that the horses are simply getting used to the situation. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It's 12:36 and it's partly cloudy and minus 14 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. There could be the possibility of higher winter kill levels in fall-seeded crops. Paul Thorogood is based in the Moose Jaw area and is the agriculture lead for Ducks Unlimited.
We had some early snow in November, but that mostly melted and we're left with pretty much no snow cover for most of the winter. And the snow we had was kind of poor quality from an insulation perspective. It was ice crystally. So we saw soil temperatures. I've got soil temperature probes on my farm here, and we saw temperatures in that minus 22, minus 23 range, which is certainly concerning for crops like winter wheat and for the hybrid fall rye.
What's the potential for winter kill damage in the spring then?
Certainly, it puts them at a higher risk of winter kill. And, you know, Saskatchewan has a pretty low incidence of winter kill in winter wheat, similar to the areas in the U.S. that commonly grow winter wheat. On our farm, we've had it for 24 years, and we have not had a winter kill event yet. But we're thinking that this year, we're a little concerned anyway. So there's a chance that farmers may have to consider reseeding, depending on how things look in the spring.
When is the best time to make that assessment?
Well, typically we recommend that farmers look at their winter wheat crop when they're half done spring seeding. There's a lot of, energy pent up in the spring, and often people want to make a premature decision. But we generally encourage people to give the crop every chance that they can to recover, because it is amazing how resilient a winter cereal crop can be. So when you're a third to a half done spring seeding, go out, do some plant counts, dig up some plants and see whether they're producing new, fresh white roots and that sort of thing. So don't jump the gun. Be patient.
Any estimates of winter wheat in fall rye area?
The acreage actually dropped a fair bit this fall, and I think two main factors kind of pushed that. We saw a pretty strong price premium for high-protein wheat, which winter wheat is not in that category. So the market kind of pushed people away a little bit. Now, we've certainly seen feed prices really rally, so I think the opportunity for winter wheat is still out there. But the other thing that discouraged a lot of farmers, and I actually seeded less acres myself, was how dry it was this fall. It was tremendously dry during that mid-September seeding window, and in many parts of the province anyway, and it made for some really tough seeding conditions and some poor fall establishment as well.
Paul Thorogood is based in the Moose Jaw area, and he's the agriculture lead with Ducks Unlimited. Dairy Farmers of Canada, as you heard, is asking its members to consider an alternative to palm supplement pending the outcome of a study by stakeholders and experts. It's not a health-related issue, but surrounds consumer complaints that butter is not softening to a spreadable consistency at room temperature. Small amounts of palmitic supplements are often sometimes given to boost the cow's energy levels. Andrew Campbell is known online as the Fresh Air Farmer and has a dairy farm in Ontario.
So what we've done in the past is coming into summer, particularly based on, you know, what type of hay we have or grass or corn silage or whatever it happens to be, if we need to give them a little bit of a bump of energy, we found that these fats are one of the most efficient ways to be able to do that. So we can just give a little bit to it, support them through, you know, kind of the worst of the summer. And then once things cool down, we get back to, you know, just the regular stuff.
On his farm, they follow a feed nutritionist recommendation.
So, you know, based on their advice, you know, we put it in for those few weeks and then we pull it out. And when we do put it in, you know, we're talking about a few grams for a cow that's eating tens of pounds of feed. So it is one of those things that in terms of the amount, as well as the length of time, is pretty small.
The ingredient used in dairy cow rations is not pure palm oil, but simply a byproduct. It's now 12:41 on GX on Agriculture, and it's time for the livestock market conditions.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at 119.20. That's up 80. June live cattle trading at 117.62, down 80 as well. April feeder cattle trading at 141.47, down 110. May feeder cattle trading at 144.17, down 90. April lean hogs trading at 88 even. That's up 85. May lean hogs trading at 89.67, up 80. And that's the livestock market conditions. The president of the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association is calling last week's fundraising auction a huge success. Kelsey Elford of Cairnport says there was spirited bidding on the 80 donated items Tuesday through Thursday of last week.
You know, the horse race style to the end extended the time a little bit, and that encouraged people to get a little bit more aggressive and bid on the items that they wanted, and it was a huge success. Most of the donated items brought more than what their retail value would be, so people were very, very generous and were extremely humbled and thankful for that. It was a great success.
Do you have an idea how much was raised?
We were just shy of $64,000 on 80 on the 80 lots that were available. That's an incredible number for stock growers.
And it's used to help run the organization for the coming year?
Absolutely. You know, that's what keeps the lights on and keeps the employees doing the work that they do. You know, Chad McPherson is invaluable to the stock growers, and he deserves the hats off for putting this all together and is a huge asset to the success that we enjoy. And so outside of board expenses and lobbying efforts and all that sort of stuff, this goes to the day-to-day and pays a salary too.
How did Thursday's semi-annual virtual meeting go?
It was well attended. We had about 53 in attendance. We had a real nice intro from former Minister Lyle Stewart. Of course, Minister Merritt's taking a little bit of time right now. And so, you know, we were happy to have him introduce the meeting and give us some words of encouragement. We had Dr. Jared Carlsberg expand on the effects of COVID-19 and the meat disruption in the meat value chain because of it last year, highlighting how there was some definite holes identified when we're sending all the animals to two or three different packers. But, you know, that has created some benefits in this province. There's been a lot of people reach out to local producers and are sourcing their meat off farm. And, you know, businesses have been born in this province because of it. There's apps that have been put in place. And so it sparked a good conversation, and that was the main topic.
Kelsey Elford of Cairnport is the president of the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association. It's now 12:44 on GX on Agriculture, and we'll return right after these messages. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. And early results from work being conducted by the University of Saskatchewan show extreme processing using heat and steam has the capacity to reduce the toxicity of ergot-contaminated grains. Depending on the level, ergot-contaminated grain in the ration can result in symptoms ranging from reduced feed intake and slower growth all the way to death. Dr. Denise Bolio, an assistant professor of monogastric nutrition in the University of Saskatchewan's College of Agriculture and Bioresources, tells us what ergot is.
Yeah, ergot is one of a series of mycotoxins that we see produced by a fungus that we see. It infects primarily wheat and rye and grasses, and it causes if livestock consume very small amounts of ergot, we'll see decreased feed intake and decreased growth. And if they consume more, it has an effect on circulation, so it can actually cause gangrene. And in very high amounts, they can lose tails and lose their ears and maybe even hoof slopping, we'll see. And also in animals that are lactating, sows that are lactating, it'll cause milk output to be decreased.
At what concentrations does ergot cause problems?
Yeah, unlike other mycotoxins, which primarily affect non-ruminants or pigs and chickens and things, ergot affects all classes of livestock, so including ruminants like cows. We see effects, or CFIA has listed a concern about ergot in our feed as low as one part per million, so at really small levels. And at those concentrations, we may or may not see effects at any stage. However, when we look at slightly higher levels, certainly we'll see effects in pigs, on feed intake, on growth. And at low levels, we will see depressing effects on the hormone prolactin. And this is what causes the decrease in milk output in our sows. So the bottom line is with growing pigs, we don't see effects until we get to higher levels, maybe 3 or 4 parts per million. But at any levels, we have seen effects on this hormone prolactin. So we can expect, or we would guess, there would be an effect on milk production at even really, really low levels.
What are researchers looking at in terms of reducing the potential effects of ergot contamination in feed?
Yeah, we were looking at, there's a little bit of evidence in the literature that feed processing, so this would be processing with heat and moisture, so pelleting, extrusion, steam explosion, for example, decreases the toxicity of ergot. And we think this happens because ergot is actually a series of compounds, ergot alkaloids, and there's many of them. And we think that processing might change the profile of these alkaloids to ones that are less toxic. So that was our hypothesis, would be that feed processing using heat and or moisture would change the chemistry of the ergot alkaloids to a type that we think are less toxic to the animal.
What is specifically being looked at and compared?
Yeah, we used some screenings from rye and wheat. So these are what would be remaining after feed processing, and they were quite heavily contaminated with ergot. So we started with these, and the first processing we used was steam explosion, which is really, really drastic processing. It uses very high levels of steam under severe pressure. And when we use this, we did see dramatic changes in both the absolute amount of the alkaloids in the screenings, and also a shift in the alkaloid profile. And when we incorporated these screenings into diets for piglets, we did see a decrease in growth and feed intake with the screenings that were not processed. And processing with steam explosion, we didn't see the decrease. So we did decrease, we reduced the toxic effects of the ergot alkaloids with steam explosion. However, when we use less drastic processing methods, such as extrusion, we saw the expected effects of ergot in the diet, but we didn't see a reduction in this toxic effects with the processing. So it appears that this effect we see on reducing the toxic effects of the ergot might only be with really extreme processing. But we're still looking at trying to find a processing, a type of processing that would be practical and would still decrease the toxic effects of the ergot.
What will the next step be in this research?
Yeah, we're still analyzing the results from our last experiment with the pigs, the growth experiment, trying to figure out at what levels are affected and perhaps at what stage we see these effects. We don't see a sustained effect of the ergot, so we're trying to figure out what's happening there. Is it effect just on feed intake, or does the ergot also have an effect on growth? So we're still analyzing that data and some of the samples we have from that experiment. Obviously, with the COVID and the pandemic, everything is a little bit slower these days. And then our next step will be to do a similar experiment with poultry and see if we get comparable effects in poultry. And this will help us obviously learn about the chickens, but it will also help us go back and learn a little bit about the pigs if we see different effects in poultry and pigs. So it might help us explain some of the results that we see in the pigs. But there again, with COVID and the pandemic, everything takes a little bit longer. For us to be able to do these experiments now.
How will this information be applied on the farm?
Well, we would think that livestock producers in years where we know there is contamination, we wouldn't, for example, we wouldn't encourage producers to feed contaminated grains, but in years where there are severe contamination or there is severe contamination, they may want to take steps to prevent the effects of ergot and or other mycotoxins in case some of the grain they are feeding has these contaminants in it. Some years, low level of contamination is in a lot of our feed grains. It varies from year to year, depending upon the growth the environment during the growing season.
And is there anything you would like to add?
Just to say that this research is supported by the Saskatchewan government, and we appreciate that very much. And I look forward to having more results and perhaps a more discussion on this.
Dr. Denise Beaulieu is an assistant professor of monogastric nutrition in the University of Saskatchewan's College of Agriculture and Bioresources. It's now 12:54 on GX on Agriculture, and please stay tuned. Your Commodities Update is coming up next.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading down across the board this afternoon. May canola trading at $738.70, down 50 cents. July canola trading at $704.60, down 20 cents. May Minneapolis wheat trading at $6.32¾, down 6 cents. May Kansas City wheat trading at $6.23 per bushel, down 10¾ of a cent. May Chicago wheat trading at $6.49½, down 10¾. May corn trading at $5.38¼, down 9¼ cents. May soybeans trading at $13.94½, down 9¾ of a cent. May oats trading at $3.61 per bushel, down 3¾ of a cent. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Yorkton Exhibition Association is taking the threat of COVID-19 seriously, and the health and safety of all of their patrons and staff is paramount. Resulting from the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, and at the recommendation of provincial health authorities, the Yorkton Exhibition Board of Directors, together with the Yorkton Lions Club, have made the difficult decision to cancel this year's edition of the Yorkton Spring Expo, which was scheduled to begin on April 9th, and it's been postponed until at least next year, in 2022. Unfortunately, the Yorkton Exhibition Association has also made the decision to postpone the Yorkton 4-H Spring Steer and Heifer Show, which was scheduled to run April 8th through 10th of this year. That's been postponed to April 21st of next year. Please know these decisions are not made lightly. However, they feel it's in the best interests for everyone. They have been in contact with all parties involved to inform them of these cancellations. And as well, you are encouraged to reach out to their office with any specific questions or concerns. Their office hours are Monday to Thursday from 8 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. And their number is 306-783-4800. Once again, 306-783-4800. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock on GX and Agriculture, and it's time to check the GX 94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Becoming cloudy with a 30% chance of flurries, winds south-southwest at 15 to 30, and a daytime high of minus 8. For tonight, clearing, winds west-northwest at 15 to 30, but the temperature rising to plus 2. For tomorrow, partly to mainly sunny, winds west-southwest at 10 to 20, the temperature falling to minus 3. For Wednesday, sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, and a high of plus 2. For Thursday, partly sunny, a high of plus 3, and Friday, a mix of sun and cloud, a high of plus 2. In the Paw, it's minus 17 degrees, Swan River minus 19, Dauphin minus 15, Brandon minus 15 as well. Show Lake Russell is at minus 16, Roblin minus 15. Regina is at minus 10, Saskatoon minus 5, Hudson Bay minus 14, Broadview Mooseman minus 7, Indian Head minus 9, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 7, and the Yorkton Melville region has a partly cloudy sky, a south-southwest, south-southeast wind that is at 24, gusting to 33. 79% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 14 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 23 degrees. And that's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX and Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX 94.